I'm Bex, and welcome to the Week Junior Show. Today, I'm joined by three of the team from the Week Junior, the magazine making sense of the world for 8 to 14-year-olds. We've got managing editor Vanessa.
Hello.
Writer Michael.
Hello.
And assistant editor of the Week Junior's monthly science and nature magazine, Kieran.
Hello.
This week, we'll be talking about what could be the largest dinosaur ever found, a dramatic week in the Asian nation of Myanmar, and some very good dogs. Plus, we'll be having a debate about travel. But before all of that, because we're talking about dinosaurs, I want to know, what dinosaur does everybody think they are most like? This should be fun. Vanessa, go for it.
Archaeopteryx. You weren't expecting that, were you? Now, this is because they made it through the meteorite strike 66 million years ago and became birds, and I like a survivor. Incidentally, extra factoid, the swift that we know today hasn't really changed much for at least 49 million years. So if you really want to be a success story, grow wings.
I love, whenever I see birds really up close, a part of me does think they're just little dinosaurs, and you have absolutely proved my point there. And can you say the word for me again, the first dinosaur word?
Archaeopteryx.
Oh, lovely stuff, thank you.
Archaeopteryx. There you go.
I have been
practicing. Yeah.
I wanted to get you a chance to show off as well. Michael, what about you?
Well, I decided to take a very scientific approach to this. So I went to the Natural History Museum's website and took their What Dinosaur Are You quiz. And according to them, I am a Gigantosaurus, which Vanessa wasn't sure was an actual dinosaur, but I can assure you was a large and slow-moving carnivorous creature. In fact, the Gigantosaurus is one of the largest known carnivorous dinosaurs.
Wow, and I love that you've gone to all of the trouble of going on the special Natural History Museum's website as well.
It's really good fun. You should do it, definitely.
I'm impressed. Mike, and it is definitely real. It does sound like a made-up dinosaur, Michael.
It does, but I can assure you that it is real. Maybe this should have been the real or rubbish instead. Is the Gigantosaurus a real dinosaur?
I mean, we all know I'm very easily fooled, so it could well have been. Kieran, how about you?
I did not take the What Dinosaur Are You quiz because I felt this connection to my dinosaur on a very spiritual and real level, and that is the Stegosaurus, because I think it's cool, it's calm, it's collected, it shrugs off danger, it's not bothered by anyone or anything around it, but if it's provoked, if it's attacked, it can take down a T-Rex. So that's me, I think.
You've really gone to a deep dive of your own personality there. I love it. Well, if you can take down a T-Rex, unfortunately, that means you're going to have to take down me because I've gone for a T-Rex in this occasion. Mostly because one of my nicknames from my friends is B-Rex, so it felt weird to not give myself the T-Rex dinosaur here. B-Rex is actually a name I answer to. And also, I have terrible posture, much like T-Rexes, so I figured we were probably quite similar. So that was what I went for this week. I want to know what everyone's favourite fact is as well. Vanessa, tell me what you've learnt.
I've learned that pieces of Lego that were made in 1958 would still fit a set that you bought today. What with the Swifts, I have to say, I'm all about the design that works forever this week.
I love it. That is a great fact. Michael, how about you?
I learned that President Donald Trump, when he was president, had a Diet Coke button in his office. So a small red button that he would press whenever he wanted a Diet Coke. And apparently the new president, Joe Biden, has had this removed. So he's clearly not as much of a Diet Coke fan as Donald Trump was.
I would love that in my office right now. I love Diet Coke so much. It's my favourite thing in the world. And I include my family and friends in that. So I would love that button so much. Kieran, how about you?
I'm sticking with the dinosaurs. I learnt this week that scientists have completed the first ever detailed study of a dinosaur's bum. And they found that it actually resembles that of some modern bird and reptile species.
Scientists doing the hard work there. That's the stuff we needed to know about. Great. Fantastic three facts from this week, guys. And now it's time for Real or Rubbish. Michael, do you have a story for me today?
I do. And this is a very big story for anyone who's interested in Bigfoot, which is the huge, hairy, human-like creature that some people think lives in Canada and parts of the US. And a politician in Oklahoma in the US has actually proposed a law that would encourage people to come to the area and hunt for Bigfoot. He wants an official Bigfoot hunting season, and he's even willing to offer a prize reward of around £18,000 to the first person who can capture the monster. Now, does this sound true to you, Bex, or is this a beast of a lie?
Now, Bigfoot is on the same level as the Loch Ness Monster, right? Where people kind of want it to be real, and there's a little part of you that thinks it probably, or it maybe could be, but it's never been seen, right?
Exactly. But maybe now there's an £18,000 reward out there and a Bigfoot hunting season. Perhaps we might find that proof we've always been looking for.
But, you know, do they know not to do this? Is it rubbish? Because if they did, you know, some hoaxers are going to go out there dressed up as a Bigfoot and then, like, you know, pop a big furry costume on and run around a little bit and then maybe make people think they're real, and then it'll be dangerous to the person inside the costume because they'll be hunted. I mean, that would be pretty dangerous, right?
It would be. You've given it a lot of thought there. I mean, if this is true, I hope the organisers have thought about that possibility.
Yeah, get health and safety Bex involved. I am concerned about this because it feels like a weird thing to get people outside for right now, especially when we're all meant to be kind of being a bit safer. But and also, I was led to believe in my travels that maybe Bigfoot isn't real. I don't want to, you know, blow anybody's minds there. I will have to have a think about this because I don't know whether people will people want to do it. And also, if you see a Bigfoot, you don't want to kill it, do you? You want to take a picture, maybe a little selfie with it, right?
A Bigfoot selfie competition would perhaps be a much better idea.
I would love that. I mean, I would happily snap away. All right, I have a think about Bigfoot and whether there is an £18,000 price on his head. And if you've not read your copy of the magazine yet, feel free to make your guess before the end of the show, whether it's real or rubbish, that story, and we can find out the answer together. Now it's time for our three big stories from this week. So, Kieran, what's been going on in the world?
This week I wanted to talk about some of the events that have been going on in Myanmar, which is a country in Southeast Asia. And early in the morning on the 1st of February, the army seized control of the country and arrested the leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, along with several other politicians. And this was known, this has been described as a coup, which is the sudden and illegal seizure of power from a government by a group, usually including the army, which is what happened in Myanmar. The military is very powerful there. The country has a constitution, which is a set of rules or principles that dictate how a nation should be run. And in Myanmar, that guarantees the military one quarter of the seats in parliament. So they've always been very powerful. And they are also the leaders of three very important government departments, including the Department for Defence. And between 1962 and 2011, it was the military that was in charge of the country. Then, after 2011, there was the introduction of parliamentary elections, which allowed people to choose who they wanted to lead the country. And in 2015, Aung San Suu Kyi was elected to lead the ruling party, which is called the National League for Democracy, or the NLD. And for a lot of people, she was seen as the leading figure of the country at that point. So the recent coup, which took place on the 1st of February, is tied to events that go back to November last year, when there was an election and the NLD won 83% of the vote. So it was a good result for them. But the military wasn't happy with those results and went to the Supreme Court to argue that the election hadn't been fair and that people hadn't been following the rules properly. There wasn't a lot of evidence to support those claims, and the army's appeal was ultimately unsuccessful. And so in the week beginning the 1st of February, Parliament was going to approve the NLD to form a government and to continue as the leading party in the country. So I mentioned earlier Aung San Suu Kyi, who is the daughter of General Aung San, who played a pivotal role in the country gaining independence from the UK in the past. She studied here in the UK, but when she returned to Myanmar in 1988, she found that the country was in a state of political unrest, and she led a campaign against military rule and called for democratic elections, which would allow people to choose who lead the country, as opposed to it being the army that decided that. And as a result of that, she was placed under house arrest by the army, and she was forced to stay at home for 15 years in total at various points between 1989 and 2010. And while she was praised by many people around the world for her commitment to that effort and for ultimately helping to make that transition from military rule to democracy possible, she has been criticised in recent years for working with the military and for her actions towards the Rohingya Muslims. That's a minority group, some of whom live in Myanmar, and many members of that group have been killed by the military or been forced to flee their homes across the border into the neighbouring country of Bangladesh. And so, what's happening now? So, after the coup happened, the army's commander-in-chief is now in charge of the country, and he has said that there will be a one-year-long state of emergency. And in that time, the military will have special powers to deal with the crisis that's happened, and it will mean that in that time, power won't, as far as the military's concerned, be handed back to parliament. Suu Kyi has written a letter urging her followers to protest against this, and there have been protests in the country, and she's warned that it will be dangerous if the military is allowed to control the country again. And many world leaders, including Boris Johnson, the UK Prime Minister, have agreed with that statement in the sense that they've also criticised the coup. So this is a monumental event in Myanmar, but it is probably not the end of the story. It's just the start.
It is such a complicated situation. I'm glad you could explain it, Kieran, because I was kind of following it this week, but there's so much going on. Like you say, it's probably not the end of the story.
Absolutely. And it's part of a long story. You know, Myanmar used to be part of, or it was run by the UK, I should say. It then got independence and went through this period of military rule. And only relatively recently has it found its feet as a democratic country where the people get to decide what's happened. So I think a lot of people there have expressed their upset at things seeming to take a step back. But of course, we will have to wait and see what happens in the weeks and months ahead.
Next up, we're going to chat to Vanessa. Vanessa, what have you got going on in the world?
Well, I've got a significant change of pace, I have to say. My favourite story this week is about dogs and what they can understand. Now, lots of dog owners claim that their dogs can understand every word they say, but this turns out to be pretty unlikely, by which I actually mean wrong. They might understand the gist of what their owner is saying, but every word? No, they don't. And we know this because a team of scientists has been studying dogs' understanding and ability to learn new words. I have to say, as with quite a lot of research that goes on, I'm baffled by who has the time or the funding for this, but never mind. Test the dogs they did. One of them was a 4-year-old border collie called Whiskey, and one was a 9-year-old Yorkshire Terrier, both of which are well known to be very intelligent breeds. And the scientists showed them 7 items that the dogs could recognise by name and 1 new one that they didn't know. When asked to fetch the item, even the one they didn't know by name, they worked it out by process of elimination. So in other words, oh, object I don't recognise must be called word I don't recognise. But when 2 new objects were introduced, it all fell apart. The next step was to see if the dogs could actually learn the new word, bearing in mind these are mature dogs, not puppies, so it's more difficult to teach an old dog new tricks, is the theory. They would if they played it with it with their owner, and the owner said the word, said the new word 4 times, but they weren't so hot on remembering and they'd forgotten it after an hour or so. So they sort of needed to hear it more often as a kind of top up, which is actually how children learn words too. If you think back to your baby books and the songs that you used to sing in baby school, they always have lots of repetition, which helps the words to stick. It was only the cleverest dogs that could manage this anyway. The researchers tried the same with 20 typical pet dogs, and none of them could learn a single word, so none of them were brain boxes, clearly. But still, if you have a dog, you know, why not try it and let us know how you get on?
Well, I do have a dog, Vanessa, and I'm quite tempted to give this a go because, I mean, she's clever. She's not like the brightest, you know, spark, but she's pretty clever, and I could give her some words to learn, right?
Well, I would start off with one. So I think if you show them lots of objects that they already know the name of them. Ooh, look, Puffy, lead, basket.
yes.
But maybe sure. Maybe it would learn. I don't know. But yes, you could test. You should test and find out, Bex.
I'll give it a try. She's very good at knowing when her food is about to be given to her. So I'll see if she can get further than that. right, Michael, what have you been finding out this week?
Well, this is quite literally the biggest story of the week because researchers in Argentina have discovered the remains of a dinosaur that they think could have been the largest creature ever to have walked the Earth. Now, the specimen dates back to around 98 million years ago, and work is currently going on to identify just how big it was and to find out whether it's a brand new species of dinosaur or one that is already known to science. Now, the fossils were discovered back in 2012, and ever since then, scientists have been excavating the fossils and trying to work out what species of dinosaur it is. And now they've identified it as one of the largest examples of the titanosaur group of dinosaurs. So these were giant plant-eating dinosaurs with long necks, which lived from the late Jurassic period, which was 201 to 145 million years ago, until the end of the Cretaceous period, which was about 66 million years ago. Now, another famous titanosaur dinosaur is the Argentinosaurus, which is what currently holds the record for the largest known dinosaur species. But they reckon that this dinosaur could be even bigger. Now, they're not quite sure yet because they still have to dig out more of the bones and have a look at some of the other body parts. And the key thing to look at is going to be the leg bones, which will give them a better idea of the dinosaur's full size. And once they've got this information, they're then going to compare it to the Pataghitaytan, which was another recently found dinosaur fossil that is also a contender for the largest ever land animal. And that was 15 meters tall and weighed 62 tons, which is the equivalent of around 800 average-sized adult humans, to give you an idea of just how big these dinosaurs were. So watch this space, because we could be about to crown a brand new champion in terms of the largest creature to have ever walked the Earth, and they might have to make a whole new Jurassic Park film just based on this dinosaur, because it is very, very big indeed.
Did you say as tall as 800 people?
Yeah, it's the equivalent of around 800 average-sized adult humans. So that's the Pataghitaytan. It weighs 62 tons.
Right, sorry.
So that's the equivalent weight of 800 humans.
Wow. I mean, that's a lot of humans. That's amazing. I love that a new contender has entered the dinosaur arena. Wow, yeah, you're right. Another Jurassic Park film will be in the works as we speak. Now, I believe, Michael, something else has been going on in your world this week. You've chatted to somebody pretty interesting.
Yeah, so I recently spoke to Sam Homewood, who is the co-presenter of How on ITV, and I asked him which superpower he would like and why, and this is what he had to say.
This is maybe a boring answer, but I'd really like to fly. I think that would be really cool. I don't know, I'm not scared of heights, but sometimes I don't love them. If I could fly, it'd just be great, because there's no fear. I've based that on nothing but bungee jumping, which I did not like. I liked the bungee jumping, but I was terrified looking over the edge. If I could fly, nothing to worry about. Although bungee jumping wouldn't really work, would it? That's fine, I'll fly. I think I've ever thought that. I'm going with fly.
Right, so it's time for the big debate, and this week we're asking if less foreign travel is a good thing. Who can tell me a bit more?
That's my job this week, Bex. Well, I think we're all wondering about whether we can go on holiday this year and where we'd like to go. The current Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, has said that he's optimistic that people will be able to have summer holidays this year. But of course, he's optimistic about everything. So it's down to everyone else to actually work out how well-founded his perpetually sunny outlook actually is. So assuming we will be allowed to go on holiday, this week we're asking whether less foreign travel is a good thing. We're asking this because foreign travel might be quite tricky this year. The government has announced that anyone arriving in the UK from places where coronavirus infections are high will have to quarantine in a hotel for 10 days. This is to stop people from bringing in new infections or new strains of coronavirus. So it's too early to say whether people will be allowed to travel abroad this summer anyway. And so lots of people have rushed to book holidays in the UK, whether that's camping or staying in expensive plush hotels. There's really a full range on offer in this country. So we're wondering, home or away?
Excellent stuff. Now, normally I ask the people, you know, in the debate whether they've got a clock and a timer nearby, but I'd say Kieran and Michael are my two most reliable contenders, so I don't need to ask them that. They already have it all covered. They know the rules. They play by them and I love them for it. So, Kieran, you are arguing for the motion, you're first up, so whenever you're ready, take it away.
I love going away on my holidays. Going abroad somewhere like France or another country in Europe for a week of sunshine, beaches and new places to explore. But I do think it's time for us all to consider whether actually staying in the UK for our holidays might be a better option all round. Let's be honest, how many of us can actually say that we've explored everywhere that we want to in the UK? There are still so many places on my to-visit list, and I've only properly been to two of the four nations in the UK. And I think it's right that we prioritise going to places that are near us rather than travelling overseas. This will of course help the planet because we won't be hopping on a plane to go to our holiday destination. It'll also help local businesses and people who rely on the tourism industry, particularly after a very difficult year last year. And of course, if you make new friends while you're travelling in the UK, it's easier to keep in touch in the future. oftentimes when it gets to holiday season, people want to travel far away in search of fun, adventure, good food, beautiful beaches and fascinating history. But actually, we can find that very near to us.
Oh, lovely stuff. A lovely round minute there. So, great debate from Kieran, but does Michael disagree and how? Michael, when you're ready, take it away.
Well, as Kieran said, the UK does have some lovely scenery, some beautiful beaches, Cleethorpes Beach, for example, but they're almost always covered in rain. The weather here isn't great throughout the year, and it's no wonder that one in five people living in the UK has low levels of vitamin D, which is the vitamin that comes from sunlight. It's good for our mental and physical health to fly abroad, to see new things, to meet people from different cultures and learn more about it, see landmarks and natural wonders with our own eyes. And we're very lucky that we live in a time where we have the ability to be able to travel abroad and to see all of these things. Just think throughout history of all the people who would have wished they would have been able to travel abroad and go and see these countries and places for themselves, but they weren't able to. We shouldn't take this privilege for granted. And by going abroad, we get to become closer to people around the world, bring the world closer together and come back home with a changed perspective and outlook on life, having had a brilliant adventure and learned new things. So absolutely, we should travel abroad. It's good for ourselves and good for the world.
Wow, Michael bringing out the big guns there with Cleethorpes and vitamin D. Vanessa, what do you reckon?
Well, I'm just picking up on what Michael said, actually, about that it's a privilege. And I think that I think travelling abroad is such an exciting and fantastic thing to do that perhaps people do take it for granted a little bit. So I would say yes, probably less foreign travel actually, but really savour it and make it something special when you go.
I think I would agree actually, and I do think Kieran's right. I don't know whether people have travelled much in the UK in the first place, and I think it's amazing the places we've got here that we don't realise are so amazing. So I'd be really interested to see what the listeners think of this. If you've got an opinion, go online right now to theweekjunior.co.uk/polls and respond to the poll, or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk with a video clip explaining what side of the debate you support and why. Now, last week on the podcast, we debated whether fiction is better than non-fiction. And in the poll, a whopping 82% of you said you thought that fiction was best, compared to just 18% who would prefer to pick up some non-fiction. So here are some of your comments.
Finley sent us a video explaining his thoughts on the debate.
I'm Finley, and I'm 9, and I think this week's debate, I kind of think fiction's better because you get to know more interesting things, and in non-fiction, you don't actually know what the characters are. So that's my reason and why. Bye. Hope you enjoy it on the show.
A lot of our pop jammers agreed that fiction is the best. One wrote, "Fiction is better. It transports you to a world of wonder and curiosity. Even if I'm in lockdown, I can go anywhere from fairy tale castles to the tops of rooftops or even to the Amazon rainforest." Another added, "I prefer fiction as I can get lost in a world of imagination and not always be reminded of what terrible things are happening, especially now."
Many listeners were on the fence, though. One pop jammer told us, "I think that both kinds of books are great." And another added, "Neither is better. People can have different opinions. Personally, I prefer fiction, but non-fiction is more useful." And finally, this pop jammer wrote, "Yes and no, because fictional books can let your imagination run wild and will help you to learn great vocabulary. On the other hand, non-fiction can help you to learn facts and build general knowledge, and it will also help you in school."
And Ella sent us in this clip.
"Hi, my name is Ella and I am 8. I live in Mombasa, Kenya. I think the fiction is better because it lets your imagination run wild. But non-fiction doesn't have that magic in it."
Thank you both.
Ah, amazing stuff. And I loved hearing some listener voices in there. So if you want to have your voice heard on the podcast, it's super easy. Just grab a grown-up and record a video telling us what you think of this week's debate and then send it to us at hello@theweekjunior.co.uk and we could play it out on next week's show. Time to reveal our real or rubbish story. Michael, remind me about it again, please.
So this is the story that a politician in Oklahoma in the US wants to start an official Bigfoot hunting season with an £18,000 reward.
Okay, I feel like this could be the ultimate tourist trap, the ultimate tourist attraction. I do feel like it's very badly timed in the middle of the world right now. And £18,000 seems like it's a good sum of money, obviously, but it's not like, I feel like you could probably get more for a Bigfoot if you're really on the right market. But that's the money thing is putting me off because I don't think it's enough, to be honest. But I'm going to say it's real. I'm going to say this week it is a real story.
Drumroll, please. It's real.
Yes!
So, Justin Humphrey wants the Oklahoma Wildlife Conservation Commission to set up an official Bigfoot hunting season. And you were spot on with the tourism. He says he thinks it would be a great tourist attraction to bring people to the area.
You're on a roll.
Maybe I should be in charge of their tourism. Yeah, I'm doing pretty well, right?
What's going on?
I mean, thanks for your surprise, Kieran. I mean, no need to be rude about it. Well, I mean, you know, another win, but let's face it, there's always next week. Well, I'm thrilled about that. That's it for the Week Junior Show this week. So it's goodbye to Vanessa.
Goodbye.
To Michael.
Goodbye.
And Kieran.
Goodbye.
Drop us a comment on Pop Jam at the Week Junior or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. And don't forget to rate, review and subscribe wherever it is you get your podcasts. Bye.
If you want to get your hands on a copy of the Week Junior magazine, we're offering a 6-week free trial. To get yours, head over to dennismags.co.uk/theweekjunior and use the code PODCAST.